Today Shir Masechta Yevamos Daf Kuf Yud Ches. We will begin on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin on the base at the bottom Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Achos Omeres Meis, one wife, a person had two wives, one wife came and said that the man passed away, Achos Omeres Loi Meis, and the other wife says he did not pass away. Zush Omeres Meis, the one that says that he died, the halach is Tinaseh of Tinate Ksubasa. As we've been learning, a wife has the ability to say testimony that her husband died, and we trust that testimony, and therefore this wife who said that her husband died may get remarried and receive her ksuba. On the other hand, Zusha Meres Loimes, the one that says that he did not die, Loite Nasel, Loite Ksuba, so she has no right because she is contending that her husband is still alive. And we'll discuss this more in the Gemara. The Noi de Behuda does have an interesting discussion. Here we're learning, as we've been learning from the previous year, that a tsara does not have the right to say testimony that affects the other wife. But as we learned in the Mishnah yesterday, that was to say that the wife, that the husband is dead. Does a tsara have a namonis, she trusted to say that the husband is alive? What is the halacha? When we learned that there are five women that are not to be trusted to say testimony, so most mefarshim, that's the way Poshup Shad is, that these women have no place to say testimony here. Or perhaps it's only, as we learned yesterday, that they aren't believed because when they're saying that the husband is dead, they really have in mind that the other wife should get remarried and then won't be able to go back. What will be the halacha, however, when they're saying that the husband is alive, will they be believed or not? The Noi de Behuda says that perhaps they should be believed under those circumstances. It's only in the circumstance of our Mishnah, where they're contradicting each other, there the wife who says that he's alive cannot get remarried, and the wife that says he isn't alive may get remarried. And then there are other Mefarshim I saw that want to distinguish between a Tzara, who's never believed, whether to say the husband is alive or dead, versus the other women that we discussed in the previous year that are not believed to say that he's dead, but are believed to say that he's alive. Now we have the next case in the Mishnah. Here we have the following circumstance. Achos Omeres Meis, Achos Omeres Naharag. One wife says that he's dead, and the other wife says that he was killed. So Meyoimer, we have to look at these two women as contradicting each other, because one says he died naturally, and one said he was killed. Hoyle Machish Zuzu, Hare Elo Lo Yonosu, neither could get married. Rabbi Yehuda of Shimon Omer, Hoyle Vezu Vezu Moidish Ein Kayim, since they both agree that he's dead, their only disagreement is how he died, Yonosu. Each one of them may get married. And there's a very fundamental Machloikus Rishonim, which has very serious halachic ramifications, how to understand the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda of Shimon. One way of understanding it is that each tzara is an independent entity. She's speaking for herself. So one tzara walks in and says, he's dead because he died a natural death, let her get married. Another tzara walks in and says, he's dead because he got killed, you're allowed to get married. They're two independent people. As we started, a tzara may not say edus that affects the other tzara, and each woman is speaking independently. That's one way of looking at it. But there's another way of looking at it that some of Farshim advocate. These two people aren't really contradicting each other. They're both agreeing he's dead. There's only a dispute in the details. One says he died naturally, and one says he got killed. What would be the nafkamina? A gewaldige nafkamina. What would be if two Adam walk in? Two Adam walk in and say this person is dead. However, they contradict each other in how he died. One said he died a natural death, and one says he was killed. According to our first explanation, that this is a special din, that each wife has her own nemonis, that only we say by the wives. But two Edim that are saying testimony that isn't perfectly accurate cannot combine to one Edis. Actually, it's considered that they're contradicting each other. According to the second pshat that we learned, that this is not really considered a contradiction, because the bottom line is that they're both testifying that he's dead. In a case where two Adam would walk in and say that he's dead, albeit one says that he died naturally and one says that he was killed, It's not considered that they're contradicting each other. We don't have a situation of the Edom contradicting each other, that she's left in a limbo. Last case of the Mishnah, Edom Mimes. One eight says that he's dead, the Edom Mimes. Another eight says he's not dead. Ishai Mimes. Ishai Mimes. One woman says he's dead, and the other one says he's not dead. The other halacha is Hareza Loi Tanase. She may not get remarried. Before we go into the Gemara, we just have to review something that we've been discussing already for two shiur. A tzara has animosity, one tzara to the other tzara. That's something that's a given. And the Gemara is going to explain later how deep that animosity goes. Now, when we speak about a tzara having this animosity, and therefore hurting her co-wife, so the explanation, the situation that we've been discussing till now, is that she's going to come and say that her husband is dead, in order that the other wife should get remarried, and then the husband will come and take him mizeh mizeh. But if you think about it, there could be another situation. She knows her husband is dead. But what she's going to say is that her husband is alive. Why would she say her husband is alive? She hates her co-wife so much that she's ready to say that her husband is alive in order that a co-wife shouldn't have the pleasure of being able to get remarried. She should remain in Aguna. Again, when we talk about it, tzara hating each other. And the Aruch HaNer makes a very interesting observation. He says, we see from here the animosity of tzaras to each other remains even after the tzaras. Because let's think about the case I just discussed. One tzara, the tzara knows that the husband is dead. So they're not co-wives anymore. No more husband. But our animosity to that woman is so deep that she still wants to hurt her, and even though the husband is dead, she'll say he's alive just to make her remain in Aguna. You'll all ask the obvious question. She's not only hurting her co-wife, she's hurting herself by doing this. So there's a pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote, a famous pasuk in Shoftim, of Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim. When Shimshon went to that building with all the Plishtim in it, and he tore down the beams, he put himself at the same risk as everybody else. He was willing to do it. Here too, the animosity is so deep that she's prepared to hurt herself and say that the husband is alive and she can't get remarried just because she hates her co-wife. So now, let's analyze the Mishnah. The first case of the Mishnah was that one wife said he's dead and the other wife said he's not dead. That's what the Mishnah says. Tamar de Amar Loi Meis. So since the other wife argues, wife one says he's dead. Wife two says he's not dead. So second wife can't get married. What's the deek in the Mishnah? The deek in the Mishnah is her ishtika. What would have been if the first wife comes in and says he's dead? And the second wife doesn't say anything. It seems that our Mishnahs would hold the Tanase, that based on the testimony of the first wife, not only may she get remarried, even the second wife may get remarried. How's that true? Asked the Gemara. Ain't the halacha is one wife can't get remarried based on the testimony of the other wife. So says Taisus, who says that that's the deek in the Mishnah? Because Taisus learns Pesha in the Mishnah. Beautiful. Taisus says the first wife says, Zoysim Echasimeres Mes, Vachasimeres Loi Mes. So the Mishnah says, Zushai Meres Mes, the one that said he died to Nasi, he's allowed to get remarried. Why does the Mishnah have to continue teaching us the Zusha Meris Loimes, the one that says that he's not dead, Loitanasa? It's obvious that she can't get married. It's coming to teach us, says the Gemara, only because she's arguing and saying that the husband is alive. But if she would agree, it seems that our Mishnah holds that she may get remarried. Why? She's getting remarried based on the testimony of a tzara. Answers the Gemara, Loi. Meis Itzrichlei. The Chiddush is, and listen to Gemara, listen to psychology. I would think that when the second wife came and said that the husband is not dead, that's when I think that she should get married. He's saying he's not dead. How could she get remarried? She's saying that the husband's alive. Because Salkadata Chamina Homais. She really knows he's dead. So why is she saying he's alive? V'hada Karma Loi Meis. The reason she's saying he's alive, as we said in our introductory remarks, she really wants to hurt her co-wife. And she's so willing to hurt her that she's going to say that he's alive just to make her remain in a guna. It hurts her, but Thomas Nafshi and Polish the camera. She doesn't care. She'll go down with her. And therefore, I would think that by the second wife saying that he's alive, really what she's saying is, I know he's dead. And therefore, she should be able to get married. Kamashmon, that whether if she says that he's alive, or whether if she's quiet, she can never get married. Ask Tosfos, how could the Gemara have a Havamina that she could get remarried? She's sitting here and saying her husband's alive. Shavya nafsha chaticha desura. She's saying she's an Eshet Ish. How could the Gemara have a Havamina that she's allowed to get remarried? Answers Tosfos, that of course, if all she said was that my husband's alive, there would be no Havamina that she'd get remarried. The situation of the Gemara Tosfos expounds is, the first she says my husband is alive with the intent to hurt her co-wife. When that doesn't work, because our Mishnah says that the first wife is allowed to get married, she comes to Bez and says, you know what? Everything I said wasn't true. I only did it to my co-wife. I wasn't successful. So I want to tell you the truth. I know he's taka dead. Says Tosfos, too late. And we don't accept that. And she remains usher unless full-fledged Aiden come to say he's dead and the first wife could get remarried. The Paiskim extrapolate from this Gemara a very important rule. We've been discussing that Sarah and the other women are not trusted. What will be the halacha if she's mesich lefituma? You know, in halacha we speak about many times, if somebody's mesich lefituma, they wasn't intending to testify. That many times we accept that. What will be the halacha here? A tzara is mesich lefituma. Can we trust her or not? So the Rishonim, and based on that, the Paiskim can take that out, say, if Mesich Lefutumai is trusted even by Tzara, why didn't the Gemara give that as a Teretz? The fact that the Gemara didn't give that Teretz is a proof that a Tzara, or the other women that we discussed in the previous year, are not to be trusted even by Mesich Lefutumai. And that's the Halacha L'maisa.
Continue. If the second one is quiet.
She can't get married. She still can't get married based on a Tzara's testimony. The next question, the case of the Mishnah was, when they're contradicting each other. One said he died naturally, and one said he was killed. The Ramei says neither could get married. Ask the Gemara the obvious kasha. The Lifla Ramei Beration, the first case of the Mishnah, they're also contradicting each other. Yet Ramei says that they're allowed to get married. Why doesn't Ramei disagree in the first case of the Mishnah? Says Rabbi Elazar, you're right. The first case of the Mishnah, Ramei would disagree also. And the opinion that's being represented in the first case of the Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimni. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afil Tem Rameya. We could say that the first case of the Mishnah represents Rameya. Baha Afil Rameya Maida. Rameya will agree, the Kalai Mesbi Edis Isha. If one woman says that he's dead, and the other woman says that he's not dead, Lava Choshehi, is not considered a Chosha. So the Machloikas Rashi and Tosfos, why we believe the first one. Rashi seems to say a very difficult pshat, and the Rishonim, including Tosfos, ask on Rashi, that we believe the first wife. So since the first wife came in and said he's dead, that's the wife we trust. But Tosfos asks, what's the difference who's first or who's second? And what would be if the wife that said he's dead came second, so then she's not believed, so the Mishnah should have said it. So therefore Tosfos says like this. When one wife and another wife are arguing, they both agree he's dead, they're just arguing over the details. So then we don't see any animosity here. And therefore we have to be concerned, do they really know what happened? And therefore Ramei doesn't accept the testimony of either wife. But if one wife says that he's dead, and the other wife says that he's not dead, so we have what we learned in the previous Gemara, that she had a cheshbon, she had a calculation of hurting the first wife, therefore Ramei will agree in that case that she's not to be trusted. Continues the Gemara, Tanan. Now we look at the last case of the Mishnah. The last case of the Mishnah was, Eidam Ameis, Veidam Eloi Meis. One eight said that he's dead, another eight says he's not dead. Ishoi Meres Meis, or one woman said he's dead. Vishoi Meres Loi Meis, said Aloch is Harez Eloi Tanasi, she's not allowed to get married. So as the Rishonim explained this Gemara, if we recall the Mishnah that we learned on Daf Kufi at Zion and Beis at the end of yesterday's Shir, this is the exact same case of the Mishnah we learned yesterday. That if two contradictory Eidim come at the same time, we don't accept the testimony. If we didn't give her a heta, because they cancel each other out. So what's our Mishnah adding with this case? So says the Gemara, this is the way Rishonim, Gevaldik, learn Pshat in the Mishnah. If we're going to say that the way to understand this last case of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is telling us that the first wife came and said that he's dead. And then the second wife, and after she came, the second wife came and said he's not dead. And we still have the testimonies cancel each other out. So the Mishnah is telling us a chiddush. But if that's not what the Mishnah is discussing, what is our Mishnah teaching us that we didn't learn in the Mishnah yesterday? But if that's the case, that the end of our Mishnah is teaching us that if the two wives contradict each other, we don't accept the testimony, whose opinion does that represent? If we'll agree with Rabbi Lazar, that Sadra Meir argues even in the ratio of the Mishnah, and when the two wives contradict each other under all circumstances, they cancel each other out. So now we could explain that the last case of the Mishnah is summarizing what Rameya holds. But if we're going to hold like Rabbi Yochanan just told us, that even Rameya agrees that if the two wives contradict each other, one saying he's dead, one saying he's not dead, the one says he's dead can get married, the other one can't. So what is the last thing of the Mishnah teaching us? Let's learn the Gemara inside. Tanan. Eidam emes, veidam eloi mes. Isha emeris mes, isha emeris loi mes. This woman can't get married. So Bishlam Rabbi Lazar, coin Rabbi Lazar, that says according to Ramei, whenever they contradict each other, if he's dead or not, we don't accept either testimony. So our Mishnah, stomach Ramei. El Rabbi Yochanan, that says even Ramei will agree in this case that the wife that says he's dead can get married. So what is this Mishnah teaching us here? Kasha. But as the Rishonim teach us many times, we said this rule, that there's a difference when the Gemara says the word Kasha, versus when the Gemara says Tiyufta. When the Mishnah says Kasha, that means it's a Teretz. When the Mishnah says Tiyufta, there is no answer. What's the Teretz? Rav Yoichan is going to have to explain that the end of our Mishnah is actually repeating what we learned in the previous Mishnah. And when two Edom, who are not related, come and say testimony, it depends. If they come together, they cancel each other out. If on the other hand, one comes and said he's dead, and we accepted the testimony, and then one comes and says he's not dead, we don't accept the testimony, and she's continued to allow to get married. Continues the Mishnah. A woman and her husband traveled overseas. And she comes and says her husband is dead. So she's like, I'm married, she's entitled to a ksuba. But tzarasa, as we've been learning, her testimony cannot help her tzara, and her surah can't get remarried. Hoy Sabas Yisrael a Kohen. Now let's analyze this tzara. The tzara is a Bas Yisrael who was married to a Kohen. If the husband's dead, if there were no children, she may not continue eating truma. If the husband's alive, she may continue eating truma. Toich v'truma de Reb Tarfin. Says Reb Tarfin, a chiddush. As far as we're concerned, the first husband, for her, is considered, the husband's considered alive, and she could even eat truma. Rekivayim ain't zed dark metzios b'de avera. It's impossible to say that, says Rabbi Akiva. How could we accept the testimony of the first wife, allow her to go marry another man, and assume that he's still alive for the second husband? And therefore, Eidze Dag Metzias Medeyavera, Achetei Surli Nasei, indeed she may not get married, because the testimony of a tzara can't help another tzara, but she's not allowed to eat truma. Asur Melechel B'truma. Now Tosfos, a very important Tosfos, tries to analyze Reb Tarfin's opinion, meaning the following. When Reb Tarfin says over here that the second wife is allowed to eat truma, does that mean as far as the second wife is concerned, we completely discount the first wife's testimony? Or does it mean, Taisva says, only truma de rabbonin? To go allow it to eat truma de raisa would be too much. So Taisva says that it's only truma de rabbonin. Even Reb Tarfin would not let the second wife eat truma de raisa. That's what Tosfos says. Where is this very relevant? La'alocha l'maisa. The Rishonim, the Achronim, there's a lot about this in the Shev Shemaitza, discuss the following situation. We've been learning already two shiurim about the women who are not to be trusted. We spoke about it yesterday in the Mishnah. So let's say one of these women come in and say to a woman, your husband dead. What does that mean? And we don't accept the testimony as we've been learning. Doesn't mean we completely don't accept the testimony. And if this woman would go and take kedushin from another man, she's an eshes ish, it's meaningless. If she would have relations with another man, the children would be mamzerim, or we're not so confident with ourselves. So the mefarshim want to say, Tosfos is a raya, that even Reb Tarfin agrees we're not so confident. And that's why you only let the second wife eat truma derabanan, not truma deraisa. And therefore, if she went to marry a second man, everybody would agree that she has to get a get, because her first husband may be indeed dead. That's how many mefarshim learn. Others want to explain that that is the machloikas of Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva. Reb Tarfon will allow the second wife to eat truma, because as far as she's concerned, the testimony is totally null and void. Reb Akiva doesn't hold that way. However, the Shef Shemaitza disagrees. And he says everybody agrees that the testimony is meaningless. And if she would get a kedushin from a second man, the kedushin is meaningless. So if the kedushin is meaningless and the testimony is meaningless, why doesn't Reb Akiva allow a tichuma? So Shmaitz explains that Akiva doesn't let it teach truma because it's just truma and iguna don't travel together. There's a special din of iguna kilabar rabbanon. When does nothing to do with truma? When there's a person that comes in and said your husband is dead, we have to be concerned and not allow it to teach truma. But as far as testimony is concerned, says the Shef Shmaitzah, everybody says that the testimony is null and void. And if she took kedushin, it's no different than an Eishes Ish taking kedushin that would be totally ineffective. There's also machlekes. It's similar to machlekes we discussed in the previous year. What would be the din by an eid echad? We have machlekes of Tarfon and Akiva about a tzara, speaking about when the one tzara said he's dead and the other tzara, how does it affect the other tzara? What would be the halacha if one eid says he's dead and another eid says he's not dead? Will the wise be allowed to continue eating truma or not? Some Rishonim say, since they cancel each other out, they may. Another say, since one aid did say he's dead, we have to be concerned and not allow him to continue eating truma. Next case, a case that we discussed in yesterday's shiur. Amr Meis Bali, a woman walks in and says, my husband passed away. And then she says, V'akach Meis Chami, my father-in-law died. And therefore, my mother-in-law should be allowed to get married. So the halach is, she... she's entitled to get married and get ksuba. However, she can't say testimony that will affect her mother-in-law. As we learned yesterday, there's an animosity there. And therefore, if the mother-in-law is a Bas Yisrael married to a Kayin, according to Reb Tarfon, yes, says Reb Akiva, the mother-in-law may not get remarried. However, Surah Malachal Truma, she may not eat truma. So the Gemara asked the obvious question. Why does our Mishnah have to repeat the machlokes of Tarfon and Akiva twice? The tzricha. And this goes back to something we spoke about earlier in the shiur. Diet mahach kamaisa. In the first case, it's referring to a situation where one tzara is saying testimony that will affect the other tzara. As we've explained, the animosity between tzaras is a very deep animosity. It's a personal animosity because they have to share their husband's affections. That's why, says the Gemara, the whole comer of Tarfon, that one tzara cannot be believed regarding the other tzara. Because Mishum the tzara the gufa, there's a personal animosity and it's not to be trusted. Av chamoisa, the animosity between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, the tzara mili the alma, it's not so deep. It's like we explained yesterday. The animosity there is because and the daughter-in-law doesn't like the mother-in-law because she goes and tells the husband everything she does. So it's not such a deep animosity, that perhaps we should accept what she says and not be so quick to accept that the husband is not there. If we only had the second case, I would say, since there's not such a deep animosity, we have to be concerned that when the daughter-in-law said that the father-in-law died, she may be saying the truth. In the first case with Tsoris, maybe Eimim Moedel Reb Tarfon, Akiva agrees with Reb Tarfon that we should completely not be concerned with it. That's why we have to mention it twice. Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel Halacha Reb Tarfon. The halacha is like Reb Tarfon, that one tzara is not to be believed at all regarding another tzara. Says the Gemara, Amar Abai, Afa Na Na Mitanina. We could prove it from something that we're going to learn in the Mishnah. If somebody comes and says, Nitin Li Ben B'Medina Sayyam, somebody says that she went overseas with her husband, and everybody knew they had no children. She comes back and she says, I had a son. My son died, and then my husband died. So she left with the assumption that she has to have Yibum, and she comes back with the assumption she has to have Yibum. The halacha is Nemenes, and she has Yibum. But what happens if she says that she had a son overseas, and the son died after the husband, and therefore she doesn't have to have Yibum? Bali v'akach b'ni. She says, my husband died and then my son. So here we had a woman that we always assumed would have to have Yibum, and according to our current testimony, she will not have to have Yibum. The halacha is Einan Nemenes. She's not to be trusted. However, as Tosfos teaches us, the Choshen L'Dvira, even though we don't completely trust her, an absolver of Zika, we have to be concerned somewhat, and therefore we don't let her have Yibum, we only let her have Chalitza. The Chalitza is Lemus Yibemus. But Tosfos asks, Tosfos says, the Gemara's question is, why do we have to add in the Mishnah the words the Choshen L'Dvira? We should have said Chalitza is Lemus Yibemus. Why is the Mishnah adding the words the Choshen L'Dvira? It teaches us, when a woman says testimony about herself, to some degree we have to be concerned. The testimony that Sarah is giving about her is something that some completely discounted. Which is Rav Tarfon taught us in the Mishnah, that as far as one Tzara is concerned, what the other Tzara said is meaningless. Says the Mishnah, Kiddush Echus Mechamesh Noshim. A person did Eirsin with one of five women, then he did Eze Kiddush. And he doesn't know who is the one. Kalachas Ameris, Oisik Kiddush. Each one of them says, I was the one that he was Mekadish, and I'm entitled to the Ksuba. Noisin Get L'Kalachas V'Achas. He has to give a get to each one of them, because each one of them is a Shail of an Anxious Ish. Umnei Ksuba V'Neim, and he leaves the Ksuba between them, Umestalik Divir Reb Tarfon. So Rishadim point out, that this Mishnah is going according to the man of Omer, that holds that we give a ksuba even to an arusa. Because if we don't give ksuba to an arusa, then the Mishnah's whole subject is not relevant. Others explain that our Mishnah could be going even according to the Shitais, that an arusa does not get a ksuba. But here, the person volunteered to give the ksuba to the arusa. And now the question is, who is the one that he promised the ksuba to? Who's the one that he married and promised the ksuba to? Others explain the Mishnah this way. He married all five, but only one of them did he promise a ksuba to. And now they're fighting amongst each other. Who is that woman that's entitled to the ksuba? So Tarfon says, since he's only chayv one ksuba, he puts that amount of money down, and then he could go. The Rishonim point have a machloikis. It's actually two shitas in Shulchan Aruch. What does it mean that he puts the money down and mistalik? Doesn't mean that he has to leave the money in Beis Din. No, he has to take the money out of his pocket and leave it in Beis Din, and then when the woman could, and then let the woman fight it out. Or since no woman can conclusively prove that she's the one that she's entitled to the money, he holds on to the money and says, "When you settle your battle, come to me and I'll pay you." The Rishonim also point out that even though Rav Tarfon says that halachically he only has to pay one ksuba, the Rishonim point out that the right thing to do, l'haitz l'day shemayim, l'fnim mishuras hadin, is to give each one ksuba. Why? The Mefarsh Master Karen Ayra, the Aruch Neder, asks, the halach is that if somebody has two deposits by him, $100 bill and a $200 bill, and they're arguing whose is whose, he doesn't have to go and pay extra if these two depositors are arguing. Why here does he have to? So Karen Iris has a very simple teretz. This person made a mistake. He married five women without knowing who he promised the ksuba to, without being careful. So he should have to suffer somewhat. In the case where he didn't do anything wrong, the people left something by him and now are arguing, he didn't do anything wrong, and therefore he shouldn't be penalized. Rabbi Kiva disagrees. He's not doing the right thing. He has to give a get and a ksuba to each one of them. Although the Rishonim point out that even according to Rabbi Kiva, that each of these women is entitled to a ksuba, Rabbi Kiva will agree that they can't get a ksuba without a shvua, without swearing that they are indeed entitled to that money. They just can't claim it without a shvua. Similar case. Gazel Echad Mechamisha. He stole money from one of five people. Then he did a gozel, and he doesn't know from whom he stole. So kol echad omer, Odyssey Gozel. Now everyone comes and says, I was the victim. So the halach is, Meniach Gzeil Beinayim, he leaves the money between all of them, Umestalik Divir Reb Tarfin. Again, Rekiva disagrees, Ein Zadarach Meitz B'dei Avera, Achi Sham Kalech Vecher, he has to pay off each one. Says the Gemara makes an observation. Kidesh Ketani, the case of our Mishnah is that the person did Kiddushin with Shtar or Bia. However, Baal, if he did Kiddushin with Bia, like Tani. Gozel, there, says the Gemara, the observation of our Gemara, is even Rav Tarfon would agree that he has to pay each one the Ksuba. Why? Because since he did something so not nice, he had relations with a woman, and now he doesn't know who his wife is, and he can give her a divorce and not even pay her a Ksuba, Rav Tarfon wouldn't agree, and our Gemara seems to learn that Rav Tarfon will agree that under that circumstance, he too holds that each one of the women has to get a ksuba. Similarly, Gozel Ktani, Lokach Lektani. Our mission is referring to a case where he stole from five people, so he did something wrong. He did an Avera. He stole. That's why the halacha is that he has to pay all five. What would be the halacha if he bought something? He bought something from a store on credit, and he forgot which store he bought it from. So he didn't do anything wrong going to a store. There the halacha will be that even Rabbi Kiva will agree that he doesn't have to pay. Ask the Gemara, if that's the case, Mani Masnissen, whose opinion does our Mishnah represent? Loi Tanakam v'loi Shem Blazer. It won't represent either of these shitas. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rav Shem Blazer Oymelay Nechel Kureb Tar from Rabbi Kiva. There is no machloikis al shekidesh echosh mechamish nashim. If somebody did kiddushin in one of five women, vim any day is a kiddush, and then he doesn't know who is really his wife, that the halach is shemeniach ksuba b'neim mestalik, he just puts down the money and can go away. Amal nechleku. On who? Where is there a machlokes? Ashabal, that he did bia. Rav Tarfon oimer meniach ksuba b'neim. There, even in such circumstances, he just puts down the ksuba umestalik. And even though he did bia, which as we explained at the beginning of this piece of Gemara, is something not nice to the woman that he shouldn't have to give it a ksuba, makes no difference. Continues he bought something for five people, from one of five stores. And he doesn't know from which store he bought. That the halach is shemeniach demei mecha b'nei mestalik. Everybody agrees he doesn't have to pay all five stores. Le'nechleku el shagaz mechamesh, when he stole. That even in that situation, shama Rav Tarfon meniach gzeil b'nei, even though he did gzeila u'mestalik, Rav Kiva Omer achi sham gzeila kol ech v'echad. So the Gemara analyzes what we just learned. Midakam Shimon Elazar b'kiddush v'lokach le'pligi. That if he did Kedushin, that would be a. And if he bought, they're not arguing. Mekal the Tanakama Sava, Pligi. That they're even arguing in that case. Where he didn't do an Avera. Where he didn't do something not nice. Still they're arguing. Samadhi. So now, who is the Tanakama Mishnah? E Tanakama listening Kiddush for Lokach. Let him tell us the Kiddush. That even in the case of Kiddush, not Bia. And even in the case of Lokach, they're arguing. What does our Mishnah have to speak about Kiddush v'Gozel? If on the other hand our Mishnah represents the opinion of Shimon ben Lazar, Solishni Baal v'Gozel, because according to Shimon ben Lazar, in the case of Kiddush, there is no machlokes between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva. According to Shimon ben Lazar, Rabbi Kiva will agree that by Kiddush, he only has to pay one ksuba. So our Mishnah, whose opinion does it represent? Says the Gemara, it really represents the opinion of Shimon Elazar. My Kiddush, what does Kiddush mean? Kiddush b'Bia. The teacher, it's talking about a case where Bia was done, and Tana Kiddush, L'diach ha'koich d'Rekiva. The Avgav d'Sud Rabbonon of it, even though it's really an Isser to do Bia. But it's only Isser Rabbonon to be Mekadosh b'Bia. As the Gemara says in many places, Rav Mangid, Rab would give Malkus, a man, the Makadosh B'Bia, and somebody who did Kedushin through Bia, it's not the appropriate manner, still, Konas. And Tana Gozel, the Yach Kach, the Tarfin. to tell us how far of Tarfin is Mekel. The Rav gav disur deraisa. Stealing is an issur deraisa. Still, Ovad, still Lekonis. So the way we're explaining the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is going according to the opinion of Shimon and Lazar, that they argue only by Bia and by Gzela, but by Kidesh and Lokach, there is no Machlaikas. There is no Machlaikas. 2 points to be made. One is the Aruch HaNer's question. The Gemara, Aruch HaNer says, why don't we keep the Gemara simple? The Gemara should have said that the Mishnah itself is a stira. First, the Mishnah speaks about a case of Kidesh, when nothing bad was done, and yet Reb Tarfon is Mekel and Kiva is still Machmer. And then the Mishnah speaks about Gzela, where something was bad was done, and Reb Kiva is Machmer, and Reb Tarfon is still Mekel. Why doesn't the Gemara say that the Mishnah itself is self-contradictory? Do you have to do something wrong or not? The Reish, it seems you don't have to do anything wrong to have the Machlaikas. The Sefer seems you do have to do something wrong. So says the Aruch HaNer, if we only had the Mishnah, we could explain the Mishnah. That the Mishnah is going and teaching us how extreme their opinions are. Rav Tarfon is always Mekel, Rav Kiva is always Machmer. But now that we introduce this Machlaikas of the Tanakam Rishim and Lazar, so we need our Mishnah to represent one of those two opinions, and we weren't able to. One more point. Our Gemara is saying, and that's actually the Halacha L'maisa, as we just finished summarizing, that Kiddush Bebiya is inappropriate. And that's why Rabbi Kiva's Machmer when he was Mekadosh Bebiya. As the Mefarshim, that Avram, we find, was Mekayim, did Kedushin in Sarah with Bebiya. Because the Pasuk said, Hine Be'ulas Baal, and the Mefarshim explained, she became Be'ula, Baal, he became his her husband by doing Be'iyah. So if Agamar says that doing Be'iyah in Kedushin, to affect Kedushin with Be'iyah is so inappropriate, how did Avraham Avinu do Kedushin with Be'iyah? So Mefarshim answer, the Torah never specifically says that Kedushin could be done with Kesav Ashtar. As we will Mitzvashem learn, the Gemara Masech the Kedushin learns that out of Psukim. But those Limudim weren't yet here by the time when Avraham Avinu married Sarah. So even though our Gemara correctly is teaching us, the Rav says that that's the inappropriate way to do Bia, Avraham Avinu had no other option how to do Bia. Continues the Mishnah. He shesholchi hiu balam dina siyam. A woman goes with a husband to Medina Siyam. We quoted this before. Ubenoi mam. And they leave with a son. So she is a woman who we assume will not be mechuyev to have yibam, because she doesn't have children. Or boss of amra, and now she comes back and she says, "Meis bali, my husband died, v'akach meis bani, and then my son died." Nemenis, because according to our version, she's not mechuyev to have yibam, but she left under that assumption. What about on the opposite case? Meis bani, v'akach meis bali. She comes and says, "My husband, my son, and then husband died." And in a menace. She's not trusted. Because she left, we were assuming she would not be Mechuyev Yibam. Now, based on our testimony, she is Mechuyev Yibam. And we can't allow to do that. Perhaps she just wants to marry her brother-in-law. However, says the Mishnah, Choshin L'dvara, we do have to take her words somewhat into consideration. V'chaletza Selemus Yabemus. We only allow her to do Chalitza. We do require to do Chalitza, because according to her, she has a Zika. Another case. She left with the assumption that she has no brother-in-laws. She comes home saying, Niten li yobim b'medina sayam. A brother-in-law was born to me overseas. Amra meis bali, v'akach meis yobmi. But my husband died before my brother-in-law. Yobmi v'akach bali. Or my brother-in-law died before my husband. So she's not a candidate for Yibam. Nemenis. Because she left without assuming that she's not Mechuyev in Yibam.
Her brother-in-law was born before the husband died, then she is.
But if he's dead, he can't do Yibam. If there are no other brother-in-laws. So it's Nemenis. However, if a case comes, she and her husband and her brother-in-law went to Medina Siyam. So we're under the assumption, and she has no children. So we're under the assumption that she's a woman that's going to require Yibam. She comes back and says, Meis bali v'akach yibmi, that my husband died and not my yavam, or yavmi v'akach bali. So our assumption that she's mechuyev in yibum is falling apart and in a menace. She'ein ish in a menace loy meis yavmi. A woman is not believed to say that her yavim died shetinose in order that she can marry without yibum. Now the mefarshim explain why not. Our whole perek has been teaching us that a woman is believed to say her husband died. So the question is very obvious. Why is she believed to say her husband died and she's not believed to say her brother-in-law died? If anything, her brother-in-law is only a chiv laf. So the Rishonim give a number of reasons. Sometimes there's a deep animosity between a sister-in-law and a brother-in-law, and that animosity causes her to lie. That's one pshat. Another pshat is that it's mishimi guna kilobarabonin. Really, a woman shouldn't be trusted when she comes and says testimony. But as we've been explaining so many times, Mishimiguna kilbarabon chazawa mekel. But here she's not an aguna. Have chalitza. So we're not going to make the special dispensation. A third shot that I saw is like this. We've been explaining why is a woman trusted? Because daika mintzva. She's very careful before she says testimony. When do I say daika mintzva? She recognizes that there are very serious repercussions. If she's a really an ashesish, she'll get married to a second man, and then the first husband comes, taitse mizeh mizeh, the children from the second marriage are mamzerim. So that's why she's careful what she says. But let's say a woman is mechuyev in yibam, and she says she's not. There are no repercussions. She's a yivam l'shuk, it's a chiyev lav. But there are no repercussions. That's why there's no daika mincim, and she's not to be trusted. Furthermore, v'loy meisa choysa, a man can't say that his wife died, shetikanus lebeisai. We know that sisters, one can't marry his wife's sister as long as his first wife is alive, even if they got divorced. So here the man comes and says, my wife died, and now I can marry my sister-in-law. Since he has an issa to marry his sister-in-law, the testimony of one aid is not to be trusted. Now there's a very big chiddush in the Beis Shmuel, which the Pesach Teshuva says that we shouldn't accept. The Beis Shmuel says, everything we've been learning in these parakim now becomes irrelevant because of this line of the Mishnah. We know that we're not allowed to marry two women. So every time, two women, Chaim de Rebbeinu Gershom. Chaim Rebbeinu Gershom says we shouldn't marry two women, right? Chaim Rebbeinu Gershom says the Beis Shmuel, every time a man walks in and says that his wife died, and he should be allowed to now marry another woman, he's going against the Nisr. This of Chaim Rebbeinu Gershom. Our Mishnah says that when a person says testimony, that based on his testimony, an issa will become mutter, we don't accept his testimony. And therefore, Beis Shmuel says we can't trust the testimony of a man to say that his wife is dead. Pesachei Tshuva disagrees. He says that we can't compare a chois ishtai, which is an issa deraisa, to Chaim Rebbeinu Gershom, especially since some say the Chaim Rebbeinu Gershom expired. And therefore, the Pesachei Tshuva says that that's not the halacha, and a man, even nowadays, can be trusted to say his wife died. But interesting, Beis Shmuel. Furthermore, ein ish nemer loy meis achi, a person can't say that my brother died, shiivim ishtoi, that I shall be allowed to do yibum, v'loy meis ishtoi, nor can he say that his wife died, shiis achoy, so that she marry his wife's sister. There is an interesting marajdam. The marajdam says that the Mishnah, when a brother-in-law can't say that his brother died, he can't be trusted, he should do Yibam, is if it's part of his testimony, is saying, okay, my brother died and I can do Yibam. Because there we have to be concerned that he really just wants to marry his sister-in-law. But if he just comes and says, my brother died, and the repercussions that come out from that he's going to do Yibam, come Memela, there the Marajdam says he would be trusted. Very bechidish, nobody agrees with him. They do want to say that let's say somebody comes and says his brother died. So he won't be trusted to be allowed to do Yibam. But he will be trusted to be allowed to do Chalitza and allow his sister-in-law to get married. We know that halacha is like this. A get has to be given to the woman or to the person that the woman appointed as a shliach. What? We can't just give a get to somebody and say deliver it to the wife. Why? Because when can we do that? We could do that by a gift. I could go give you a gift and say, I want you to accept this gift on behalf of my friend. Here, but a get is not a schus. What's going to be the case where a person appoints a shliach to take a get for his wife to help his wife avoid yibam? Is that considered a schus or not? Mao, kivin the sanyalay, since a sister-in-law hates a brother-in-law, schusulay, it's considered a schus, and therefore it should work. Sometimes sister-in-law wants to marry a brother-in-law. Yivam is not that bad. So you can't do that. It's our Mishnah. It's said in our Mishnah, we're concerned when she says her husband died and she should have Yibam, because we're concerned that she maybe wants to get married to her brother-in-law. So therefore, it's not considered a chayv. Yibam is not considered automatically a chayv, and you can't do it without the wife's consent. However, say to Paiskin, that nowadays, where we don't do Yibam, we do chalitza. So therefore, a husband sees he's dying, and his wife isn't here, and he gives somebody a get to take for his wife, to be zoich for his wife, so she should be able to avoid chalitza. Chalitza, as we learned, is a very embarrassing experience. It'll work. Also, the Paiskin say that while we're halacha, if someone's husband, this sometimes happens, becomes a mumer, becomes an apikiris. So no woman wants to remain married to such a man. Under those circumstances, he could appoint a shlich to accept a get for the wife, even without her consent, because it certainly is chus for her. Continues the Gemara. B'makam k'tata. What's going to be the halacha if we know a couple doesn't get along? And he goes and mezaka get for her. Kim does look tata bahadei. They don't get along. Chusulai, and therefore the get should be effective. A dilma nicha de gufa adifla. A woman wants to be married even in not such a great marriage. Tashma adam resh galaisa. Famous wording of the Gemara. Tav lemesav tandun. Every woman wants to be married. Milmesav amla, even with whoever. Abai ama the shumshma gavri. Somebody whose husband is as short as a midget. She puts herself together with the noble women. Rapapama, the naftsa gavra. Somebody who has a very menial job. He works with combing wool. Tikri besaif baba vatesif. She sits in the most important place. Rav Asham, the kulsa gavra. Somebody who has a bad yichis. Loibai tilfchal kadeira. She doesn't ask him even to give food, just that she can be married here. Tana, the kulam asanas vatos babayim. The Gemara explains, why does a woman want to be so married to such difficult people? Because like that, she could act immorally, and nobody will accuse her of being immoral because they think that she's living with her husband. And therefore, she's so every woman is interested in getting married, and since they're interested in getting married, the halacha is that you can never consider a get a schus. Hanun lach isha shalom, hanun lach isha shalom, hanun lach isha shalom.